Welcome to a Fresh Story podcast. This season, we're digging into all things divorce. We'll be discussing the ins, the outs, the nitty-gritty, all that stuff we don't talk about. Well, we're going to talk about it. Join us for everything you've always wanted to know about divorce, but were afraid to ask. Remember, you're not alone. Let's dive into divorce together. Hello, hello, Olivia here. I remember when I was going through my own divorce, I felt like I would never get to the other side, like the sun would never come out again. And more than that, how would I ever have the energy to do anything ever again? But alas, the sun does come out, and let me tell you, the other side of divorce, it's so beautiful. On this episode of the divorce season, we're covering everything you need to know to help you start fresh after a divorce, including how to refresh your home, jump into dating and relationships, reclaim your sexuality, process the divorce with your children, and manage the grief of your relationship changing and ending. Questions covered in this episode include, how can I start dating again after divorce? What's sex actually like after divorce? How can I restock my life again after divorce? Any tips for normalizing divorce for my kids as we move forward? And how can I deal with the grief of my marriage ending? The Fresh Starts experts featured in this episode include Susan Trotter, relationship and dating coach and expert, Jackie Golub, sex and spiritual wellness coach and therapist, Shantae Duckworth, professional organizer, Arisha Smolarski, co-parenting coach, therapist, certified mediator, and author of Cooperative Co-Parenting, and Sonia Harris, grief and transitions coach, founder of Rebuilding Blocks. Remember, you can find more info on divorceguide.co, divorcemonth.com, and get in touch with any of these experts at freshstartsregistry.com/experts. Don't forget, you're not alone in this process. We're all here for you. So let's get started.
Hi, my name is Arisha Smolarski, and I am a therapist, a co-parenting coach, and a mediator. I've been working for 10 plus years with individuals, couples, and co-parents, helping them navigate different stages of their relationship. I've also been a musician since I was a kid, which has definitely informed the way that I view and look at communication as verbal as well as nonverbal.
Arisha, we have another question for you. So, hi, Fresh Starts. Any tips for normalizing divorce for my kids as we move forward, you know, after the journey of the transition of divorce? How can you normalize the divorce, especially because there's not a ton of divorce representation in this world for kids.
Absolutely. I think this is such a great question. Normalizing the divorce for your kids will help your kid decrease feelings of shame, of being alone, of being confused, or that they're different from other people. So the first thing is really the way you talk about your divorce is key. We are the leaders. Parents lead and they guide. And our kids are always watching us. So when you talk about the divorce, do not attribute any blame or fault. And instead, really focus on helping your kids understand the changes, helping them navigate their feelings, their grief, their confusion, so that they can make sense of it. When they can understand what's going on, it helps to decrease feelings of being different or confusion. The other thing is talk about the difference, the different kinds of family arrangements that exist in the world. You know, it's true. Society definitely talks about this one household family system, but that's not the reality. You know, after all, there are like 50% of marriages end in divorce. That's a lot of people. So talk to your child about like there are different kinds of family structures all over the world. There are one home family systems. There are two home family systems. There are family systems where there are generations living in one house. you know? And so you can get books that talk about this. You can get books that have main characters who are living in two home family structures, so they kids can see themselves reflected in characters, watch shows or TV, you know, TV shows or movies that have kids from two home family systems. It's not easy to find, but they're starting to happen. And then you can talk to your kid about it. You know, did you see yourself in that? Did that make, you know, is that how you experience it? It can help kids find words to their feelings and experiences. And so you can, you know, have really amazing dialogues with your kids through the use of, you know, media or books. And also, you know, especially for young kids, but kids are going to find themselves reflected in their peer groups. So, you know, if you are, you know, if your kid is in elementary school or you can connect with other parents and set up play dates so your kid can hang out with other kids who have also two home family structures. This was actually a really big key changing moment for my daughter. I became friends with one of my daughter's classmates. And, you know, very quickly we realized we were from, you know, divorced families and that, you know, our daughters were being raised in a very similar way. Our kids then became really good friends. We made sure to have play dates. They started talking to each other about the similarities between their family structures and the differences. And one time my daughter came home, she was like, yeah. So this kid came up to us and was like, is it weird to have two homes? And we just looked at her and said, no, it's just normal. This is the way our family is. And I just looked at her and I saw there was no ounce of shame. If anything, there was a sense of like pride that her and her friend were able to respond in such a way that they felt supported and seen together as peers. So really help your child develop community around them that supports this as normal, that they're not alone. There are others around them. Yeah.
Yeah. And you can even do that virtually, right? Like, I mean, even if like they could FaceTime with other kids or like just as a way to normalize all of that. And I mean, everything you said, I love, and it's so important. You know, I think so much of this too is like, it's all on us, right? As the parent, like slowing down, taking the step back and being like, how am I gonna, you know, brand this, right? Like as a family. Yeah. I remember when I was going through my divorce too, I got a ton of books on just different family styles. Mm-hmm. Like, and it was just great to talk about different families, right? Everybody has a different family. And there are some wonderful resources, which we'll share, and TV shows out there that have, you know, back when my parents were getting divorced, I think it was just Mrs. Doubtfire was like the only movie that had children.
Oh, yeah.
And now there's a lot more. Right?
There are a lot more.
Yeah. A lot more. So I love all of that and making it just a normal thing for your family in a positive way. And they will not carry that shame. I think that's amazing.
Yeah.
If you had to say something to a parent who was newly divorced and trying to figure this out, what would just be like a little wise words you could share with them?
I think it's important to remember that a child really needs one secure and safe parent. And you can be that parent. And when you lead with connection and presence with your child and help them understand their feelings, your child is going to feel safe and secure with you. And that is what they need today, tomorrow, and into their futures.
I love that. Thank you so much, Risha.
Thank you so much, Olivia. So good to be here.
I'm Sonia Harris, and I am a grief and transitions coach. And what that means is I help people who are going through those big, heavy, difficult life transitions and help them really figure out who they want to be going forward, what they want their life to look like, and help them find a way to get from where they are here to where they want to go. And then I hold their hand along the way.
Amazing. Amazing. Okay. Let me pull up your question. Okay. Sonia, we have a question for you that we get a lot that I think people don't think about, but there's a lot of grief associated with a marriage transitioning to divorce. So how can you deal and manage that grief of the change in your marriage as you go through the divorce process? What do you think?
Well, I think really one of the most important things is to be a little bit selfish with yourself, you know? And people don't always think about the fact that there's grief that goes along with divorce, but here is this relationship that you expected to last the rest of your life, and now it's not. And going through that process and learning how to be on your own, learning how to not be in that relationship, learning how to find yourself after being married, or even just in a long-term relationship, right? And so it takes a lot out of you, the grief that comes with that. It takes so much out of you. And it's so important to prioritize yourself. You know, we always hear, you know, oh, put your mask on first on the, you know, on the airplane. They always tell you that. But when you're going through a massive transition like this, something that causes you so much mental and, you know, emotional, sometimes even physical pain, that it's really important that you take that self-care and you turn it up to 11, you know? And because you're going through so much, then you need, like, you need to take care of yourself even more. You know, it's such an important component. And there's so much that goes into it, but that's the first thing I tell people, you know, no matter what they're going through, the first thing is prioritize yourself, be a little bit selfish, put yourself first, take care of yourself so that you have the bandwidth, the mental and physical energy to go through that.
Yeah, and that's really hard to do when you're a parent or you're going through the divorce process. So what are some like really small, tangible ways that people can start to put themselves first?
Yeah. Oh, it is. It's so hard when you're a parent and you're trying to juggle taking care of yourself and taking care of the kids, and they're wrestling with their big emotions, you know? And so one of the smallest things you can do, the shortest and simplest things you can do, is, and I know it's hard, I know this is so hard to do when your life is in turmoil, but one of the easiest things you can do to kind of reset your nervous system is a gratitude practice. And just sit down with your journal or even just feel into it, you know, and that feeling into it is a really important thing, you know, feel into those emotions of the things that you have to be grateful for in that day. And even if it's the same thing every day, but getting to that feeling of gratitude helps kind of just settle your system down. You know, exercise is a big one, and exercise doesn't have to be, you know, an hour at the gym every day. It doesn't have to be running marathons. It can be getting out on your lunch break and taking a walk around the building.
Yeah, that's helpful. Yeah.
Yeah. Journaling is a big one. I love to sit there and really get in touch with my emotions and what are these emotions trying to tell me, and just some stream of consciousness journaling, let those things come out. All of these things are small things that can be fit in, you know, after the kids go to bed, before they get up in the morning, during your lunch break, you know, before you go to bed at night, that can just kind of help take everything that you're wrestling with and take your nervous, because your nervous system's on, you know, also turned up to 11.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
So these things to help just kind of settle it down, and do it every day. Do these things every day. You know, healthy eating is another one. You know, it's so tempting to reach for the treats, you know, and that's okay, but also do the healthy eating. All of these things kind of help set you up for just, being in your best place to deal with everything you're going through.
Yeah, because it's a death of sorts, right? It is a death of so many dreams and hopes and things like that.
Well, and when you're married, you know, there's, in my case, right? I was married. I was Sonia and Mike, and Sonia and Mike. You know, it's like there's this three things in the marriage, and then you go from that to just Sonia.
Yeah.
And so it is. It's a death of that relationship and a death of your dreams.
Yeah.
A death of the future that you thought you had. There's a lot that goes on with it.
Yeah, there is. And I'm just now I'm like talking to you and I'm like, that's so interesting to think about, because I always said divorce to me is like splitting the atom, right? It's like splitting. And so, you know, with even with death, right, we know that energy can't be destroyed. It can only change, right? Yeah. So you're changing this energy, and that transmutation is painful, right? It's really painful.
And one of the things that really makes divorce painful, especially when you have kids, is that other parent will most likely continue to be in your life for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
You know, and so moving forward, there's a lot of intentional or not intentional, there's a lot of salt that gets rubbed in the wounds after divorce, just because that person will always be a part of your life. And there's so much pain and anger and frustration and grief comes with it, and then that person is still always
triggered by
just
that.
Just in a different capacity. And
it's confusing. I remember, like, full transparency, I remember the first time my ex came to hang with my boys, you know, after we had broken up, and like not physically touching each other in the same way, even just a little, I'm not talking kissing or anything. I'm just saying, like, the little hand on the back or the other side, like, it was so weird, right? To like change that relationship and be like, I'm not going to call him honey, right? It's like, he's not my partner anymore, right? He's with somebody else at that point. So it's just so confusing to your system, I think.
Yes. And that makes a lot of sense. And also, full transparency, I myself am widowed, not divorced, but my husband had been married before he married me. And so the whole duration of our marriage was a lot of working with his ex-wife and his, you know, and relationship with his son and whatnot. And there were plenty of awkward moments with me in the picture, with her in the picture, with, you know, and watching him adjust his relationship with her, you know, because there was when they were married, there was when they were divorced, there was when I came on the scene, and there was an adjustment there too after I came on the scene.
Of course.
And it's awkward and it's difficult for everybody.
Yeah. You know? The divorce is awkward. It's a little bumbly. It's a bumbly.
Divorce is divorce is awkward.
Yeah. So in terms of the work that you do, as somebody's listening to this, we have a lot of people who are going to listen who are considering divorce or maybe post-divorce and they're still grieving. Yeah. How do you work with clients in kind of processing that grief?
So here's what I do with clients. I sit down with them and really evaluate what they're going through in the moment, because everybody's experience is unique to them. There's a lot of overlap when it comes to grief, but everyone's experience is unique to them. So I sit down and we really talk about what they're going through in the moment, what they're wrestling with, where they're feeling stuck, really. And then we also spend time talking about, okay, where do you want to go from here? What does that look like? What, you know, if you could wave a magic wand over your future, what would that look like? And we work together to make that happen. You know, there are so many inner blocks, so many things that are holding us back that we don't always realize are holding us back. So we do a lot of work around that and just kind of, you know, figure out how to dream again.
Hard to do when
you're grieving. It's really hard to learn how to dream again and come up with new goals when you're grieving old future and you've got to come up with a new one, you know? So we really spend time working on those types of things and then start taking steps in that direction, you know? So we kind of loosen things up a little bit, you know, and help their life start flowing.
Yeah. Which is important. And to have a safe space to do that is really the most important part. Yeah.
Yes. And that is something I really value with my clients, you know, as a coach, and I'm credentialed through ICF, and ethics are a big thing.
Yes, they are.
You're going to be a credentialed coach. And so absolute discretion and privacy, and don't share anything with anybody. It's private.
Yeah.
My clients have a private portal. They can share messages with me. They can journal within it. You know,
I can see it
or I don't have to see it. Like it's like the level of sharing that they want to do with me. It's up to them, but it's everything very private with all of it. And I really do want that space to be a kind of a sacred space almost. They feel safe and cared for.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Yeah. They don't have to do it alone.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Because going through something like that is so isolating.
Yep.
You know, and so giving them that hand to hold and somebody that they can just talk to, sometimes just vent to.
Yeah.
I have sessions where people just come and they just want to unload. And
yeah.
That's just what they do, that session.
That's part of it. It's part of the process. It's part of the process.
It is.
Yeah. So, Sonia, if somebody's going through a divorce and they're listening to this, what would be some wise words that you could impart to them?
Some wise words that I could impart to them. I guess it's not always going to feel like this. You know, it feels like it in the moment. It feels like you're never going to feel better, that life will never get better. You're always going to be stuck here, but that's not how it is. Life can be beautiful again. There can be, should you choose, love again. There can be joy again. And it's, yeah, so it's just, it's not always going to feel the way it feels right now.
Such good advice. Well, thank you so much, Sonia.
Yeah, thank you. I've really enjoyed being here.
Hi, my name is Shantae Duckworth, and I am a home organizer.
Okay, Shantae, we have a question for you. So we get this question a lot over here at Fresh Starts, and you are definitely the expert to answer this. How can I restock my life again after divorce? Because divorce tends to be about stuff, right? So how can we restock again after divorce? What do you say, Shantae?
I would say, especially after divorce, it's such a unique time, but it's also a great time to restart and, like I said, get that fresh start and to really make your home you. It's going to be more focused about you and if you have any children and being able to really make it a calm environment. So why not bring elements that you really love and enjoy into your space? So this is the time to, you know, get into decor. This is the time to get into wallpaper and different pieces of furniture and things of that nature to really add some uniqueness to your space. And it's also time to let things go, things that no longer serve you, things that may remind you of your past that you no longer want to take forward. And it's okay to let those things go and invite some newness into your space.
I love that. I did that personally myself. That's literally where Fresh Starts came from, was that moment of donating all my old stuff, which I donated to another local mom. And she was very happy to have it.
Yeah,
I did not want it anymore. So how can a professional organizer like you work with somebody who's going through a divorce, with the divorce process, to make things a little easier?
Oh, yeah. So I offer virtual sessions, and I have worked with folks who are going through transitional pieces, as in divorce or, you know, whatever the situation is. It can be helped with, you know, digital files like paperwork. We know the amount of paperwork is, you know, just tedious and takes a lot of time, or even just helping you organize your new space. If you just are like, hey, I need some space planning. You know, in this fresh start, of course, and just trying to figure out how I should stage my bedroom, how I should fix my living room or my pantry or whatever the situation is. Definitely able to help with that. And hiring an organizer will get all that going for you.
Yeah. And there's such an emotional component to this too, right? Because it's like,
oh, yeah.
Do I get rid of this thing from my wedding or not? So how can having kind of that, I'm going to say, like, not that you're like a life coach, but you kind of are in a way, right?
Yeah.
So like, how does having, you know, somebody like you by your, you know, like to guide during these kind of emotionally charged moments, how have you found that that's helped your clients?
I like to go in and think that, first off, I'm not just a home organizer. I am a therapist. I am a friend. I am, you know, your confidant. I'm the person that's hyping you up, the emotional support. Like, it's all encompassed in with hiring a home organizer. So for me, I have to gauge each and every client. Each and every client experience is different, and everyone's going to have different needs at different times throughout the session. So I have to be able to pivot personally as a home organizer to fit the needs of my clients, whatever moment comes up, especially going through sentimental items, you know, where we know we may have to take a little bit longer. We may have to take a break. We may have to really analyze, what does this particular item mean to you? And does it need to transition into, you know, this next chapter of your life? Or is it something that you know, it's okay to say I had good times with this, but it's okay to part with it and donate it to somebody else who could use it. So yeah, being a home organizer, you tend to, you wear all the hats and you change hats throughout the session. But you know what? It makes it great. It makes it a great and unique experience. And at the end of the day, the clients are always so happy that you were able to be there, you know, as a voice of reason for them while they're going through their items.
Yeah, and I know also you provide just like accountability of like a body, right? Like even if it's virtually, just like to sit there with them and say, I'm here.
Yeah, I mean, I get that all the time with clients too, where they're just like, I just needed someone objectively to sit here with me and go through things with me. You know, as much as like your friends and your family want to be there and want to be supportive, and yes, they are supportive and in so many other ways that a home organizer cannot be because, you know, we don't know each other on that certain level. But at the end of the day, having somebody who objectively doesn't know your ins and outs, is just coming in to come in for a few hours and help you reorganize your space, help you go through and declutter things, help you repurpose items, or, you know, just sometimes that's all you need. You're like, I don't need, that's all I need. I just need somebody to come in here and tell me, am I keeping this or not?
Because especially during like a divorce, there's so many things to think about, right? So to have somebody like you to come in and go, no, it's okay, donate that, it's fine, you know, whatever. Yep. I think that's so important. Just to pivot for a second, because you are also like the queen of helping your clients figure out how to utilize their space best without spending too much money.
Yes.
So we see a lot of women who will have to leave the marital residence and go to a smaller residence, often with children. What are just some really quick tips for like getting that place set up, making it feel homey and cozy, and also like if it's really cluttered, like some really simple things that you can just do to organize a smaller space?
You got to, you know, if you're in a smaller space, the number one thing you have to do is you got to maximize your vertical height. You're going to have to, I mean, sometimes you got to go floor to ceiling with storage units, shelving, things of that nature. That would be like the number one tip is, you know, use your over the door hanging storage. If you can get floor to ceiling shelving where you can be able to really maximize the wall space, use it. If you have to use your floor, I mean, I try not to use the floor, but if you have to use the floor for storage space, as in, you know, for shoes or things of that nature that kind of belong more on the floor, use it. You're just going to have to maximize every inch of your home to be able to make sure that it's going to be as comfortable for you and your family. But also that also pivots into how much stuff do you really need to bring in. And not saying I'm not a minimalist. I if that's your thing, that is great. I do believe that every home should have character and you should be able to enjoy the things that you really want to enjoy. But also, you know, there is a limit of how much you can bring into a space. So also keep that in mind, but also maximize your storage space in your home.
Yeah, I know just from working with you, you're a big fan of declutter before you do anything, right? Declutter, declutter. So, and I love that vertical. And even for people in rentals, there's a lot of options, right? You can still get, like, I know Home Depot even has, like, you know, shelves you can build and all sorts.
Shelves, you can build IKEA. I mean, they have so much. I mean, right now, I mean, you can go on Amazon and get it delivered to your house. Like, there's so many great storage solutions out there that are rental friendly or perfect for smaller places. That will, again, get you what you need, be able to store all your things, looks great, reliable and durable. Yeah, all of the above.
Amazing. Well, if anybody's listening to this and they're like, I need this service now, Shante is available virtually, so globally, I will say. She can get you anywhere you are. And we love Shante. She's an OG freshie over here. So, Shante, thank you so much for all these wise words, and I think they'll really help people as they move into their fresh start.
I appreciate it. Thank you all for having me.
Hi, I'm Susan Trotter, and I'm a relationship coach. I specialize in helping people who are in relationships and want to improve connection and communication. I also help people who are thinking about and going through divorce to navigate that process. And I help people who are single and dating learn how to set themselves up for success in dating and relationships and how to navigate the dating world, both online and in person.
Okay, Susan, we have a question for you today that we get from a lot of people
myself included, asking for a friend. And the question goes like this. I recently got divorced, and I'm just curious, how can I even start dating again after divorce? So, Susan, you are our expert on this. What do you say?
Great. It's such an important question, and I get it all the time. So the goal here is to learn what you can do, as I said in my introduction, to set yourself up for success in this process. And so part of it really is about how you're thinking about all of this to start with. You know, many of us grew up with this idea that there's more, that part of our goal in life is to find our soulmate, our person, that one person out of all the billions of people on the planet that we're somehow supposed to be with. It's a lot of pressure to bring into the dating world. And so I start with encouraging people to let go of that idea. I believe that there's more than one person out there for each of us, and that our goal really is to find those people who are good quality people and a potentially good fit for us. And so take the pressure off. I think it's also important to be open to possibility, and then to understand, and this part is really important, that what you experience in the dating process after, and particularly after divorce, because it's more complex than when you're dating in the earlier part of your life, is that it really all starts with you. So there are three really important things to start thinking about. One is this idea that what we put out into the world is what we get back. There's lots of different frameworks for thinking about that. But essentially, when we feel good and confident about ourselves and we're positive, we're much more likely to attract people who are also good, confident, positive people and are going to make us feel good as well. And of course, the opposite is true. Negativity attracts negativity. So it's really important to check in with yourself about where you are. Divorce is often such a challenging experience. And I think people think that once they kind of get to the end, which is the agreement, that everything is going to be over and done with. And it's not exactly. You just kind of enter really a new phase of the process. And it does take time to really process things and get yourself to a better place, and sometimes to a better place that allows you to be more successful in dating too. The second thing that's important for people to understand, and especially after divorce, is that history tends to repeat itself when we don't work through things. It's true in life in general, throughout time, that history repeats itself. And it's also particularly true when it comes to relationships. It's why people repeat patterns. It's why the divorce rate goes up for second, third, fourth marriages. People keep connecting with people that are familiar. And they don't necessarily realize it. So it's really important after divorce to take time to review your relationship history, to understand what worked and what didn't, to understand what your needs and wants were back then, what your needs and wants are now, because they're likely going to be very different. And to also understand what your part was in past dynamics. We all play a part in every dynamic. It doesn't mean we're responsible for other people and their behavior, and we do contribute to the dynamic, and it's important to take time to understand that and really look at whether it served you well in your past relationships or not, and to the extent that it didn't, to get some professional support and guidance to help you work that through so you don't keep repeating those patterns. The third point that's important too is to remember that as much as we'd like to think that we can change or control other people or circumstances, unfortunately, we actually can't do that. However, what we do have control over is how we respond to things that come, that are presented to us, and that's actually where our power is. So those are really important things to keep in mind when you're thinking about dating. I talked about positivity and confidence, and that's really tied into mindset. Mindset is really about how we think, and how we think affects how we feel, it affects what we do, and it affects outcomes. So indirectly, how we think about things can lead to the results that we get. That's really important in dating, how you're thinking about yourself, how you're thinking about relationships and dating and the online world. If you're doing that, all of it can impact your experience. So it becomes really important to, again, check in with yourself in regard to your mindset. And if you're not in a good place in terms of your thinking about all of this, then take a pause, because whatever your mindset is the lens through which you're going to engage in the process. And if you're not feeling good about it, then it will impact your experience. And of course, if you are and you're optimistic and open and positive, you will have a better experience. I talk a lot with people about how they can, again, set themselves up for success. Mindset, as I said, is one really major piece. I also encourage people to pay attention to language, which ties into that. I think words are really powerful. And I'll share a quick example. I'm also divorced. I've been divorced a long time. And when I was finalizing my divorce, I was going to be moving back to an area that I hadn't lived in for over 20 years. And I remember thinking, and I was starting over both personally and professionally. And I remember thinking to myself that I have a choice. I can either say I have to start over, or I can say that I get to start over. And the difference in that one word, have to versus get to, completely changed what happened. It changed how I felt, what I did, and the results that I got. One word changed everything that followed. That's how powerful words can be. So I encourage people to give thought to that too, and to pay attention to who they surround themselves with. It's really important that people have a community of friends or other people around them that are positive, that have good energy, that are going to lift them up. It's good to vent sometimes. We all need to do that, but you don't want to get stuck there. And to the extent that you have people around you who are in a more negative place, just be mindful of the impact that that can have. And of course, taking care of yourself is really important as well. A few other thoughts for people as they're thinking about dating after divorce. There are three really important factors that contribute to success in dating. One is confidence. It's actually probably the most attractive quality somebody can bring to the dating experience. So being confident, communicating your value, which starts with knowing what your value is as a person, as a potential partner in this process, and being able to let other people know that. And you might let people know that directly. You might let them know that by the boundaries you set, but communicating your value to people is really important. And the third thing is about creating a life that others might want to be a part of. When I was dating after my divorce, I was really clear that I would rather be alone than be with the wrong person. I had a good, full life. I was good with myself. And I wanted somebody spectacular. If I was going to invite somebody into my life, then I wanted them to be spectacular. And when you create a good, full life for yourself, then it allows you to be more selective and more intentional and to really choose people who can enhance your life rather than just be there to fill in voids. So that part is really important. And I think particularly for people post-divorce, it takes time to figure out what you want this next part of your life to look like. And it doesn't mean you have to have it all figured out before you start dating. And it is good to be mindful of these different pieces that can impact your experience. In general, you know, be positive, be optimistic. Love is everywhere. When we're open to possibility, amazing things can happen. I encourage people to have fun with the process. I'm on a mission to inject more fun into it because that's not what most people associate with dating these days. I encourage people to be selective when it comes to quality and fit and be flexible where you can. No one's going to have everything that you want. And really understand how, if you're doing online dating, how to make that process work for you. There is an approach to online dating that will lead to more success. And it's really important to understand that, to attend webinars or work with a dating coach who can help guide you in that process. And then just be out in the world, creating that full, joyful life for yourself, because you never know where you might meet someone. And I often say people sometimes show up in really unexpected ways. So keep open to possibility. But really, I think the main thing is to take time to really figure out who you are. You know, there's a big identity shift that comes with divorce. And I find particularly with women, I work with both men and women, but I find particularly with women, it takes a while to reconnect with who you are as a woman after divorce. And I encourage people to give themselves that time to figure out some things because it really will set them up for more success.
Susan, I love you. All of that is like amazing. So I have two questions that are kind of going in different roads from each other. The first question is that I see a lot of women, and I say this with love, but jump very quickly into relationships after divorce. I did the opposite. I knew I had a lot of healing work to do, and I did not want to repeat those patterns as I had my whole dating life and my marriage. So I just was wondering, and I almost, this is not even a question, maybe it's just more of a, please give us permission, Susan, to take time. Like, do you have a lot of clients that just take some time after their divorce? I feel like there's a stigma around that a little bit of like not jumping back into dating. I don't know. What do you think? Your thoughts on that?
Yeah. So, you know, everybody's situation is different, right? Some people's experiences in divorce are more amicable. Some are high conflict and really toxic and challenging and so forth. So there's no hard and fast rule per se, other than doing what makes the most sense for you. I do think sometimes there is pressure to get back into the dating world. And I think, you know, we're a very coupled up world. And I think people sometimes are, you know, in your world, maybe uncomfortable with your singleness and don't know quite what to do with it if they were used to connecting with you as a couple. So sometimes I think the pressure people that comes from other people has to do with their own discomfort and so forth. But at the end of the day, I think people need to figure out what makes the most sense for them. I do as a coach encourage people to take some time and not rush right away. Because it is so easy to repeat patterns and to, you know, be less selective because you're feeling scared and lonely and uncertain as you enter this new part of your life. So I do think it's good to take some time. The question of how much time really depends on the person and how much healing they need to do. What I would say is, you know, rushing too quickly to date isn't ideal, but taking too long isn't ideal either. And I've seen people come to me at both ends of that spectrum. You know, you can get stuck in being single, you know, saying you want a relationship, but fear can keep you from putting yourself out there too. And if you want a relationship, then you need to figure out the fear part. So you don't get in your own way.
Yeah, for sure. I love that answer. I can see why people come work with you. You're very empowering. And, you know, I think it's so scary, right, to put yourself out there again. So that being said, where the heck do you go meet people? Where do you meet people, Susan?
Yeah, so it's a great question. And it is scary, right? I mean, it requires opening ourselves up a little bit and being vulnerable. What I will say at the beginning of the process is as scary and as personal as it all feels, it's actually at the really beginning stages of connecting with somebody, it's not that personal. They don't really know you. So if they don't respond to a message or they don't follow up, it's, you know, people's behavior often says more about them than it does about us.
I like that. Great kernel for everybody dating. That's just like great dating advice. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, I kind of joke, but I'm serious about it. If they don't see how recognize how fabulous you are, then they're not the right fit for you. Right. So, but the question of where do you find people? So there's lots of different ways. Obviously, online dating, millions of people are doing it. A third or more of people are doing online dating, and that's where they're meeting their partners. So online dating is a great, I always say, it's a great avenue for meeting people that you wouldn't otherwise meet in your everyday life. You have to know how to navigate it because it can be a crazy little world. And it is a great way to connect with people, and I encourage people to consider that. In terms of online dating, when people are new to online dating or have had bad experiences with it in the past, encourage people to use sites like Match or other similar ones that are structured for people to share a fair amount of information, because that information is important. Everything people present to us is information, and part of your task in this process is to gather that information and assess what it's telling you about them in terms of quality and fit. And other things that may be important for you. And so I find it's much more helpful for people as opposed to some of the apps, which only allow for a fair amount of information. So obviously I'm a big fan of online dating, and I encourage people to get out in the world, do the things that you enjoy, whether it's hobbies or, you know, going to listen to live music. There are meetup groups that aren't necessarily single focus. They just gather people with common interests. There are all kinds of Facebook groups that are designed to bring people together socially. Get out and do the things you enjoy. In the process, you might meet somebody you're interested in, or you might make a new friend and maybe they know someone who's just perfect for you. And at the very least, you're doing things that
you that are going to fulfill you and that are going to make you feel good and confident and help you create that joyful life that sets you up for more success. So getting out in the world. And I also encourage people when you are out and about just in your everyday life, where we've all been conditioned to be on our phones and to not make eye contact and so forth. But I encourage people to say hello to other people in the grocery store or at the UPS store or wherever you might be, or, you know, if you're out walking on a trail or something. I met somebody early after my divorce at the baggage claim of an airport.
Like a movie.
Like 7 a.m. I mean, I was definitely not looking like my best self. I was exhausted. The bags took like a half hour to come up from the plane. And this guy and I just started chatting to bide our time. And he gave me his card when we were finally leaving and said, you know, if you'd like to get together, you know, reach out to me. And I did. Why not? You know, he didn't end up being the right person for me long term, but he was a lovely guy. And if I hadn't been open to having a conversation, it never would have happened. So you never know where you might meet people, and you don't have to be, you know, looking your best self on a Saturday night. You just need to be open. And the last thing I would say for meeting people, if you're open to being fixed up, then let the people in your world know that. And you need to remind them of it from time to time, because everybody's busy and you may not always be top of mind. And so just like if you're looking for a job and you let people know and see if they know any of any openings, if you're open to being fixed up, you need to let the people in your world know. And again, just remind them every once in a while.
I love that one. I actually just had that happen. A friend yesterday reached out to me. She was like, hey, were you serious about some guy that you know about hooking us up? And I was like, I was. So, you know, I love that one. I think we forget about the old fashioned matchmaking.
Don't really pick each other up anymore.
I love it.
It doesn't really happen that much, but it can, and why not? There are actually some Facebook groups that are designed actually for people to post about friends or family members that they know that that's are awesome. That they kind of vouch for them as being good people. So there's some, kind of more casual matchmaking happening. There are matchmaking services, by the way, too. And what I encourage people to do with matchmaking services, again, you can meet people anywhere and through any forum. But with matchmaking services, just because they tend to be very, very expensive, I just encourage people to do their due diligence. Check the reviews with Better Business Bureau, get references, you know, make sure that they have a good pool of people for whatever age group population you're looking for, et cetera. Because they are expensive and you want to make sure you get what they promise.
And then, Susan, working with somebody like you, who is a relationship and dating coach, just really quickly, what does that look like? Like, how do you help people?
Yeah. I mean, in terms of dating, I help people in a number of different ways. On a concrete level, I help people develop and launch a profile. So I help them create a profile, select photos, get it set up. Some of the different sites and apps have nuances to setting it up and maximizing your visibility and so forth, which most people won't know about. So I help people on a concrete level in that regard, and also with messaging. If you're online, as I said, it's really important to understand how to use the messaging. It's not just like texting and so forth. It's actually a really important part of the process. So I help people with messages and assess profiles and so forth. And then more big picture, the coaching also involves helping you understand your history and what your patterns are and what issues might be getting in the way, if they are. Looking at who you're connecting with, you know, are these really the people that are the best potential fit for you? You know, why are you ignoring this person who looks great for you, et cetera? So the coaching is really both very practical and concrete, but also really bigger picture and helping you, again, just set yourself up to find whatever it is that you're looking for.
Amazing. Amazing. One last question before we let you go. If somebody's listening to this and they're ready to jump back into dating and they need a little bit of words of Susan wisdom, what would you say to them?
It's such a great question. I would say, take a deep breath, create some mantra around some positive thoughts about dating, and then just go for it. If what you want is a relationship and you've taken some time to figure a little bit out for yourself, then just go for it and have fun, keeping in mind some of the things that we've talked about today. And if you're struggling at all with any of it, you know, reach out to someone like me who can help guide you and kind of right the ship, so to speak. But really have fun and be open to possibility and to keep in mind that amazing things can happen.
I love it. I love it. Thank you so much, Susan.
You're welcome. Thanks so much for having me, Olivia.
Hi, y'all. I'm Jackie Sheehers, a sex therapist, coach, holistic healer from Minneapolis, Minnesota. So I help a lot of people in shame sex or self become their shameless self overall.
Okay, Jackie. We have a reader question in, so I'm going to read it to you, and then I'm very curious on your answer here. Hi there, Fresh Starts. I'm newly divorced, but ready to get back out there in the world of dating. However, I'm nervous about having sex with somebody who isn't my partner. What is sex like after divorce, and how can I prepare myself for this fresh start of my sex life? So what do you think, Jackie?
Yeah, this is a great question. So to this person out there, honestly, it depends. And I think anybody that does sex therapy and coaching will tell you that same answer. So what can you expect? Honestly, if you want to be having great sex after a divorce, you probably are going to be. And in regards of some of this, why, you know, as a sex therapist, what I see typically when it comes to individuals working with me during divorce, after divorce, I see LGBTQ folks, I see BDSM and kink clients, I see folks that are opening up potentially their marriage or leaving their marriage because they want to be in an open polyamorous relationship or a poly type of relationship. And really what that's indicative of is that there was something that you were unhappy about in your marriage, be it sex, be it intimacy, be it pleasure, be it overall these different types of things when it comes to our sexual self-care. And when dating again, it's kind of like this reinvention. Like, you get to have your cake and eat it too, is really what I teach clients. So what I see with folks that may be going through a divorce and they'd be curious about relationships, sex, and prioritizing themselves is sometimes is it's ambiguous loss on multiple levels. Not only is that a loss of a partner spouse, it's a loss of maybe friendships or community, as well as household. There could be attachment wounds there. There could be money wounds. There could be loneliness. And the exciting part of this is it's like you get to start from scratch. Like, what do you want? And what I really teach folks in my sessions is don't settle for less. Like, don't be this bird in this cage where you feel locked up and stuck, be it you did that or a partner spouse did that in the past. Maybe sometimes it's both. And like, allow yourself to open up that cage and be free to do whatever it is you want to do, whoever it is you want to do, and let yourself sexually explore more. So it's really important to be able for people to explore, you know, their own solo sexual self-care. And sometimes I don't just mean sex or masturbation with themselves. No, I mean, like, if you're nervous about dating again, okay, then maybe explore that a little bit more and think about, well, what do I want when I'm dating, or what do I want with my sex life? And this is where I really coach people on learning a little bit about, like, what are their yeses? What are their nos? What are their maybes? If they're kinky more than vanilla, let's explore that a little bit too. And this is something where we want to really discern what do you desire, what do you require in relationships with these boundaries, and what is and is off limits when it comes to sex. And also, what's your own definition of sex, right? Because I think we have a cis heteronormative three type of way sex definitions. And honestly, the majority of the people that I see, it is not that way for them when it comes to sex. It's really about you do you at the end of the day. And that's what I teach my clients to be able to work on for themselves. And so sex after divorce, this is the long-winded and rounded question of it can be better than you think, honest, because what you weren't having, you get to give yourself that permission now to have in the future and build that confidence to be your sexy, shameless self moving forward.
I love that. What are some just like little steps that people could do, even just by themselves, to start reclaiming that sexual empowerment that they may have lost in their marriage?
Mm-hmm. Totally. Well, one of the things that I love to be able to give to folks, and if anybody is listening in and they want to be able to have this resource, I'll give them my yes, no, maybe sexercise where it talks about different types of sexual acts, giving and receiving. It's kind of similar to a BDSM and kink checklist. It's more simplified and there's more specific examples, which is one thing that I think can be very important, especially since a lot of times I see folks getting a divorce because a partner may be accepting of their kink or their fetish, but not affirming in the fact of like, yes, let's try this moving forward. And sometimes I see folks that go to premarital counseling where they know their partner is kinky. They say, yes, I will explore that with them. And then later on in their marriage, doesn't happen. So honestly, I think that is a great resource because I think most folks are more kinky than they think. And that could be a great one to explore right off the bat with that sexercise to understand a little bit more about pleasure, intimacy, sexual acts. That could be, you know, something that you give yourself permission to actually go through.
And if somebody wants support in kind of reclaiming their sexuality, how do you work with people in that?
Yeah, so depends. If they want support in reclaiming sexuality, what I'm noticing lately is a lot of people will actually come to me and ask me, like, Jackie, why do I have this kink? Why do I have this fetish? Why does this turn me on or off? Whatever. And a lot of times lately, what I'm finding is a lot of people are really liking the astro sex work that I'm doing, where we go through an astro sexy birth chart read. We go through four placements in their chart to understand, you know, what those zodiac signs are, what planets they rest in, and what's going to be important based off of those sexual self-care recommendations from me. Some feedback that I've gotten from people is, wow, I didn't really think that this would actually align with me and validate me so much that it does. And let's take some steps doing this, moving this forward. So some people, if they are spiritual or interested in astrology, that can be a helpful tool to kind of explore that a little bit more in a coaching session or package with me. So for those that are like, I'm not really sure, I'd rather do like maybe four sessions than I'm out, Jackie. Okay, that's the service that I book with people. And for folks that want long-term sexual wellness coaching, we'll go through some other routes with sexual self-care exercises. You know, that can be in alignment with that astro sex birth chart reading. However, these exercises are ones that I created for my sexual self-care oracle card deck. I'm going to have a workbook on that specifically in the future, but it's really being able to work with me one-on-one in coaching to be able to feel that empowerment, that inspiration that you do you at the end of the day. So sexual self-care really focuses in on attraction, intimacy, pleasure, sex education, sex toys, masturbation, foreplay, aftercare. There's so many different things that come into this sexercise deck that I actually haven't created, where it's not just sex and masturbation. There's so much more that goes back into it. And it's really building that confidence back up. And fun fact about sex, folks that actually must masturbate before giving a speech that day, they have found in research studies that they are more confident when they're walking into that room and publicly speaking. My guess, because there isn't research out there on this, is if people were doing that every single day for maybe like 21 days, because that's what it takes to build a habit, right? Those research numbers would be up just for overall confidence and self-esteem too. So there's a lot of different factors that can come into that.
Yeah, it plays into everything, right? Especially when you're going through a fresh start. Before we let you go, any quick wise words for somebody that is embarking on a new sexual journey after their divorce?
Mm-hmm. Be overly confident. Trust yourself. Trust your intuition. If something feels off, then it's off. Don't gaslight your emotions. Feeling is feeling. And we really need to start by promoting this both. And when it comes to trusting our feelings and emotions, sitting in them, doing it the shameless way. And then when we're ready to be able to prioritize some different things and come up with some solutions to any type of, you know, struggle or maybe that fresh start, if you want to reframe it, absolutely, take that step and do it one step at a time and be gentle with yourself too, after all, and let yourself be free, like be your shameless self and you do you at the end of the day.
As always, always, we want to remind our listeners that while we strive to provide accurate and helpful information, we are not medical doctors or mental health professionals. We want to remind you all that the information shared in this podcast is not a substitute for professional advice. We highly recommend consulting a qualified healthcare or mental health professional for any concerns or questions you may have. Remember, we are a podcast, but we are not licensed medical professionals. Always consult with your healthcare provider for any medical decisions. And as a gentle reminder, all opinions are our guests and do not necessarily reflect our own.
Thank you for listening to today's story. We're always here and we're so proud of you.
A Fresh Story is produced by Fresh Starts Registry, the first and only platform for everything you need to begin again. You can read the show notes and learn more about today's episode at afreshstory.com.